handle the truth.
Exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the waiting for the other shoe to drop of free speech. Everything, we're waiting for Skype to just completely fall out of the sky, along with all the airplanes and ATM machines. Let's make RBN a survivor in the Mad Max world that is to follow. So send lots and lots of fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. The friendly operator is standing by in a very friendly manner. So it's a bank holiday in Britain, and Mark Collett's going to be joining me tomorrow instead of today. So I have... I was on Dr. Duke's show just now, and I'm going to be presenting that today. I doubt anybody's heard it yet. Maybe you have, if you were listening live. But I hope you enjoy it, and I'll be back at the end of the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, friends and open-minded people, wherever you live, across the United States of America, Europe, and the world, this is David Duke, and this is Human Rights Radio. And the worm is turning, I guess you could put it that way, is that we're seeing the world waking up every day more and more to the greatest threat to not only the American people and the European people, but to all of humanity. And that's Jewish supremacism, Jewish globalism. Absolutely. This is the threat that we face. And it's a threat not only of economic exploitation and corruption and degeneracy and all sorts of negative aspects in terms of our societies. It's also something that's killing people and injuring people. And it's the greatest cause, probably, of unnecessary death in the world for the last many decades. Dr. Slattery is with me. Welcome to the show, Doctor.
Thank you very much, Dr. Duke. It's a privilege and an honor to be here. It's a white privilege to be here.
Well, you know, I guess privilege is privilege, whether it's white or black or skills or whatever. But we should, the main thing that we should have, in my opinion, is privilege that's earned. Privilege by your performance, by your merit, by your contribution, by the good things you do, and not because of corruption or bribery or any sort of, evil intention. And the problem is in this society, in this oligarchy we live in, it's an oligarchy, but it's more than an oligarchy. I mean, if you talked about the Greek aspects of government, democracy, oligarchy, whatever, you're talking about a general, like oligarchy would be the elite or the, you might say, the privileged of a particular society, the leading members of government, military, whatever, commerce. And but you think about your own people. But what we really have operating, I believe, on a global basis, and these globalists have a lot of influence in governments indirectly as well as directly, is a Jewish ethnocracy. An ethnocracy. In America, that's the only way I think we can call it such. I mean, the classic thing, I can give you a Jewish Insider magazine article talking about 9 of the 10 biggest supporters of Biden were Jews. I can give you an article from, I can show you Jewish, this is called Open Secrets, which is about campaign financing. And it shows the 20 leading contributors, the 20 top contributors of Biden in his race, of Clinton in her race against Trump in the first race, whatever, and for the Republican nomination, I should say. But anyway, this was a situation where, and the race, but this was a situation where 18 of the 20 top contributors, starting with the biggest contributor, you know, The second biggest contributor, biggest contributor was Chaim Sabin, who says his biggest issue, of course, is Israel. James Simmons, a big Jewish Zionist capitalist banker, and Sabin's also a banker as well, as well as other things. George Soros, it's another one of the Jewish financial elite. You know, Mary Prisker, that, and along with the other Prisker family, the family. Daniel.
I just want to underscore Prisker for a second. We've got the governor of Illinois. I forgot which Prisker he is. And he is a likely candidate for president from the Democratic.
Yeah, he's making a lot of waves.
Yeah.
And then you have the five. So Donald Sussman. And then finally you get a Gentile. But then you got to go down, 20 names of Jewish Zionists. Daniel Abraham, Herbert Sandler, David Shaw, another Jewish person. I checked out all these. Henry Marsh Laufer, Pat Stryker. We can just keep going on. John Stryker. Those two also should be higher on the list because they're connected. Barbara Lee. No, Barbara Lee is a Gentile. That's the second Gentile. That's the only Gentiles out of 20. If that's not a Jewish ethnocracy, what is?
I want to confirm, you're reading from the 2016 list of contributors to Hillary Clinton's campaign when she ran against Donald Trump, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I want people to think of the big difference between Donald Trump of 2016 and Donald Trump of 2024. In 2016, Hillary Clinton had all this massive Jewish money behind her, and at least in the primary election, Trump self-funded and went before the Jewish Republican coalition and said, well, you might not like me because I don't want your money. Big difference between 2016 in that, where he was saying he wanted to be a neutral negotiator, a neutral mediator between Israel, the Israeli Jews and the Palestinians, and 2024, where he had Miriam Adelson and other big Jewish money behind him. Big difference, right? It's amazing what a difference a few hundred million dollars can make.
But, it's not, I think it's not just the few hundred million, because that wasn't, the situation is most of Donald Trump's contributors, but not most of the biggest contributors to Clinton. If you look at all these Jews, if you're the top 18 of the top 20 contributors, it's those big money. How many? It used to be $2,000 limit, right, per campaign cycle. Now it was $2,500. Still is, theoretically, unless you have a super PAC or something. But if you look at that, how many of those contributions, if you're giving $10 million, like Chaim Sabin or Simmons or Soros or whatever, or more, and it's a lot more because there's a whole other different things that they can do, even secretive, even in the campaign cycle. But it's a lot more than 90% of the biggest contributors. And that's the biggest money. So what's the percentage of the overall money? Now, some of the Gentile contributors were a lot less, and there's a lot more Gentiles in the country. But still, I mean, you're just talking about complete, practically political hegemony in that particular election. Now, Donald Trump, got a lot of money by appealing to the white middle class, which he could never publicly acknowledge. He could go to a speech and he could acknowledge, oh, thank you, black people, for voting for me and supporting me, even though, and they did support him more than they supported different Republicans, because I guess it was his kind of an entertainment status as well, and MMA, connections and all this kind of stuff, a lot of appeals to blacks and sports connections, which no other president probably has had as close. But they did support him a little more, but still black voters were going to go 80, 90% against him. He might have got more blacks than other Republicans. But 80% of a minority of a 10%, 11%, 12%, whatever minority is less than 1% of the publication or the population. So it's like and Jews, by the way, voted 80% against them as well, of course. But it's really interesting when you start to examine these things. And that's one thing that we do here. And one of the shocking things we do, and this is something that, if someone, even Jimmy Dore, if or any of these people, even if Jeffrey, Sachs did it, and he just said, okay, these Jews control our government, look at these campaign finances. Now, these are facts on the ground. These are just, this is empirical facts. These are what we call empiricism, when you try to understand the real facts. We don't get a treatment of the real facts in this country. You're not going to see anything in major mainstream media. They might say AIPAC has got some influence. They just don't mention that AIPAC, however, the power of AIPAC and their direct donations, that's not the real power of AIPAC.
Mm-hmm.
What's the real power of AIPAC? They got a list of the billionaire Jews in the country who can, one of them, just like Miriam Adelson, can make more contributions to candidates, right, or one person, even Donald Trump, than the entirety of the AIPAC public contributions to candidates.
Right. So AIPAC is really, I would call it kosher certification. So once AIPAC gives its kosher seal of approval to a candidate, it opens, it is used as a, it's used as a, an okay sign for all this big Jewish money that will go either directly to campaigns or will support campaigns through the super PACs, which is when you're talking about these tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars from a single person, almost all of that is through the super PACs. But the thing about AIPAC is, it is kosher certification. And then also they have the staff, the personnel network, to keep on the politicians, to keep after them after they've been elected, to infiltrate their offices, get approved people in their offices. I've seen them personally. I've seen them dealing directly with candidates and with congressmen in front of my eyes in public.
This is a real good discussion and a really fine discussion, because here, this is the value of this program. There's things like this, because we clarify things, right? And so we often hear about AIPAC. Candace Owens talks about it, thank goodness. Many other candidates now, many other people are talking about AIPAC, not candidates so much, because they don't dare go against them. But they don't really kind of have the take or the knowledge that we do. And I think, and also they're not expressing it as powerful as it is, because it's not just AIPAC money that can go for a particular candidate or against a particular candidate. That certainly is a big factor, and it's caused some real changes in races. And you're right, it's kosher certification. But it's way more than that. It doesn't take much money to compile a list of fellow Jews, because I've already got their donator list, right, to compile a list of very powerful, oligarchical, billionaire Jews. And when you need to fundraise for any particular candidate, whether it be in the presidential level or the state level or any sort of lobbying, you send letters in and so forth, when you can do that and you need to raise money, you got a phone list. Mm-hmm. You got a couple dozen Jews who are really good at this, right? And they got a list of all these billionaire Jews.
Right.
And so they can call up Ham Sabin and say, hey, we need $10 million in this campaign for this candidate, against this other candidate who is against Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And Ham Sabin. And another aspect of it, this is not ever talked about. And this is the kind of information that we can give, that, and we do give, that nobody else does. All right. One thing I know about this is my experience as a candidate myself. Now, when I ran for office, because my donors, we didn't have $1,000 dinners or $500 dinners. Our people were just middle-class people. I mean, to get $500 in a campaign is very big for the average person. They're giving a good percentage of their income, really. Whereas a billionaire can give, $5 million, a lot of them, or $500,000, and it's no big deal. It's not going to affect their lifestyle. But people giving $500 or working class, that's a whole different, ballpark. But so the way I had to do it primarily is these mail campaigns of fundraising, and you're not getting huge contributions. You're getting this small contribution. Postage is expensive these days. They should have a franking privilege for candidates where they had free mailing. But anyway, by the time you do the printing and the postage and everything in the mailing, you could mail to people, and you could also propose your candidacy. And by the way, I did that. In fact, I was so popular among the people of Louisiana, the European American people, or at least that demographic group. But I did get some black votes and some other votes. But I was so popular among them, I think I was the only candidate in American history that could make mailings to the registered voter list. A lot of those aren't even going to be there, right, because people move and they're always old. I made mailings to the entire voter list of Louisiana, and I was able to make those mailings pay for themselves. Mm-hmm. And, but of course, in the mailing, I could push my issues, too, and do some campaigning in the mailing, which is very powerful. But as a fundraiser, if it costs you, and we did raise some money, if it costs you $300,000-$400,000 to make the mailing, and you got back $300,000-$400,000 or $500,000-$600,000, let's say, and so we raised $1 million. Okay, the you know, in terms of the money you have for media, and the retail aspect of the campaign, the media programs, are the meetings, if you're doing it through meetings. So when you look at Donald Trump, he raised a lot of money for the middle class, and it was very popular nationally. And when he had a meeting, those meetings cost a lot to put on, to promote them and to advertise them and all the other things, and to get these other people. And if you're doing mass mailings, and it's cheaper nowadays, of course, with social media, if they allow you on it. And they allowed, and they tried to suppress them at the same time. But the point is, so the disposable income is much, much more powerful because of how the money – it costs money to raise money in certain ways, right? So but when you have a list of, you know, 5,000 millionaires or 10,000, yeah, you know, whatever, or 5,000 billionaires, right, theoretically, they're actually 35% – of the billionaires of America, 35%, according to Forbes magazine. I mean, that's another figure we should remember. 25% of the billionaires of the world.
Yeah.
You can't even make that up. I mean, you can't even think about that. And you're talking about China, 1.4 billion. They got some billionaires. Europe, South America. I mean, it's like Jews are 25% of the billionaires on Earth, according to Forbes magazine. I got that right out of Forbes Israel, by the way. And so, I mean, These are things that you don't see in the surface because nobody talks about them in the mainstream.
Well, right. I mean, the richer you are, it's not just the more money you have to donate, but it's the bigger, the more of your income is disposable. You know, if you're middle class, I mean, you could have a family and $100,000 income, but very little of your income is going to be disposable. And AIPAC, you know, I described it as kosher certification. You could also call it kosher enforcement because they have the means of enforcing it through, you know, what I said earlier, but also, and probably most importantly, the threat of putting up either in the primary or in the general election, a well-funded opposition candidate. And what we saw in the last election cycle, about a year ago in the Democratic primaries, was you had these squad members, you know, the black and brown Congress people who are associated with the squad, who were opposed. You know, they all go along with the war in Ukraine, but they were some of them were opposed to the Israeli genocide. Yeah. And AIPAC funded had put up well-funded primary opponents in what otherwise would be completely safe seats, and they were able to get at least some of these people out of office, and they're going to work
on. Even if they didn't, when you had the campaign, at least let's say that two or three different Republicans, and you, because you wanted to defeat one of those Republicans, right? And you were favoring the Democrats even, but you still had your favorites with the Republicans. We have two or three Republicans, and they're running a caustic campaign against each other, trying to expose others. All that kind of weakens the approach against the Democrats if the Democrats have an incumbent or one person they pretty much decided upon by their elite. Isn't that interesting? So it's like these are just some of the mechanisms that they can use for Jewish supremacy politically. And we're just scratching the surface. And you know what this is, Doctor? This is a show showing how Jews have the supremacy that they do over government. You know, and we're going to talk about media over banking and how these things are all interlinked, both not just for funding, but let's talk about media for a second in regard to all these processes. Thank you.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Wake up. Stop wasting your own time. Today, my friends, Americans are more pessimistic about the economy than they have been in a very long time. And it can be soul-crushing to work as hard as you possibly can, still not have enough money for all the bills. If you're feeling a tremendous amount of stress about your finances, you ain't alone. According to a recent survey, approximately half the entire population is struggling with mental health issues due to financial stress. 47% of adults say concerns about money have at least occasionally caused anxiety, stress, worrisome thoughts, loss of sleep, depression, or other effects. That according to Bankrate's latest money and mental health survey. Bankrate? Who in the hell is Bankrate? Call Kettle Moraine Limited today at 602-799-8214. 65% of the people say their biggest concern is inflation and rising prices, and nearly 60% say their stress derives from paying for everyday expenses such as groceries, utilities. 56% say they're worried about having enough emergency savings. 47% are most concerned about being in debt. I like the people that are worried about having enough emergency savings. That's another one of the reasons that you should have been buying gold and silver years ago. Stop worrying about what it's worth from day to day. It's up, it's down, it's inside out. You stop worrying about those things. You can call Kettle Moraine at 602-799-8214 for a private consultation. That's 602-799-8214. Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. Call Kettle Moraine Limited today at 602-799-8214.
It is dead. That's what I said.
Let the man rap a plan, say this. And we're going to talk about media. Over banking and how these things are all interlinked, both not just for funding, but let's talk about media for a second in regard to all these processes. And we'll also talk about, you know, the controlled opposition that can go on. I'll just give you another example. Okay, so not only did they control the biggest contributors, in fact the biggest fundraiser that I've seen ever before from a meeting per se, then, even though some individuals can give a lot of money, but in the history of politics, in terms of a mass, or not a mass meeting, but really a number of billionaires, was the one that Kamala Harris handled in California. And they were just overwhelmingly Jewish billionaires in the entertainment industry, banking industry, business, you know, the people that controlled all those pistachios, you know, in California that took all the water that helped them have all those forest fires. That was a Jewish family. And, but I mean, it was the biggest meeting from just a simple meeting that Gentiles can't even imagine that you can bring that much money in. And so that's, you know, that's so fascinating to look at that. And those things, too, aren't that as expensive. Again, if you tried to make that much money in mailing, you probably couldn't even do a mass mailing of the country. It would cost you even more than the money of one-tenth of that money, close to the same amount of money that you raised. It would be that expensive. And then if you'd be lucky to get back, in fact, you couldn't get back probably what you spent just on a general mailing. But you can have a meeting and just organize these people to come to you. This is the kind of things that AIPAC does. So they have a list, and it costs literally 0.0001% of what they're raising when they make those phone calls, just with the logistics of paying the people that are getting on the phones who are skilled at that money raising. It's an amazing power, and it's much more disproportionate than you'd think, just about 18 out of 20. If 18 out of 20 of all Democratic contributors would be, well, okay, you'd still be 90% probably of the income, right? Because that's 18 out of 20 being Jews, or more. But that's not the way it is. It's 18 of the 20 biggest contributors, the giant contributors. It have to be made up by tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions perhaps of other people that are contributing at the lower tier of fundraising. And then you have the media. Now, we all know that we've got a Jewish-controlled media. This is another thing that the media can say. So even the Trump campaign and the people supporting Trump, how did the Republicans characterize the media? How did they characterize the media? Well, what they said was they could never say it was a Jewish media. Never could just, oh, the Jews control the media. They can say, oh, yeah, well, AIPAC and Zionists. You know, it's just Zionists, though. It's not just Jews. It's Zionists, right? Even though Jews are overwhelmingly Zionist. It's amazing, the biggest money, even though there are some really, there's some really good Jews. There's Jews I admire, I must say, that like Jeffrey Sachs and Finkelstein and others on the questions of Israel and Jewish supremacism. But at the same time, it's this, so what they'll say is, oh, leftists, right, or the woke, whatever. And again, or they'll say Democrats. Now, the interesting thing is that, and this is another good example of things that we expose. Okay, we had the rise of neoconservatism. Now, you know, and I know, the origin of the, quote, neoconservatives. And by the way, they're not neoconservatives. They're neocommunists. They became conservatives because Jews recognized, and this is smart. It didn't take a genius to understand this. The Jews have always been confident that Jewish liberals, no matter how liberal they were, no matter how much they say they're devoted to human rights and not against even imperialism and against corporate power, even though they say this constantly, even people like Sanders, and even though he's made some speeches against Israel, he absolutely supported every bill, the most important bills, I should say, in terms of supporting Israel over the years. But so the interesting thing is that the left and Jews and Zionists have been confident of the left for years. So they knew that conservatives, like before the war, almost the conservative movement was overwhelmingly anti-war. 70% of the American people were against the Second World War. Jews were desperate for the Second World War. 70%. And those 70% were just basically, it was more certainly conservatives than liberals. Or in fact, Jews, even in the 1920s and 30s, they dominated communism. And they also were opposed of any sort of fascist movement or any sort of, Hitlerian or anything that didn't want, that wanted war. And they knew that, so the Jews knew they could support, they could count on that. So how did they remedy that? Well, former Jewish communist Trotskyites, I mean, these were radical Jewish Bolsheviks. And the New York Times, by the way, talks about, Brett Stevens talks about that, who's more kind of a bit more conservative, but he's still on the left side. But he writes a big article in the New York Times, about how that, his uncle, whatever, was a lay salesman, and he supported this brutal, communist regime, right, in Russia. They were all kind of...
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get more tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get more tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it. Contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A five-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
If you're an avid reader or lover of history, then I invite you to purchase Blood in the Ozarks by Clint Lacy. The Civil War was a bitter and brutal conflict, but perhaps never more so than in the state of Missouri, where the wounds of the Kansas Border War still festered. The inhumanity of the conflict was punctuated with Union war crimes, especially in the eastern Ozarks. There, civilians were targeted in an effort to subjugate the fierce fighting men battling Union forces of the region. As a result of this policy, 27,000 Missouri citizens were killed during the war. Best-selling author Paulette Giles had this to say about Blood in the Ozarks. There are a great many books on the guerrillas in Missouri during the Civil War, and almost all of them have to do with the bushwhackers in central Missouri, Quantrell, Frank and Jesse James, Bloody Bill Anderson, and others. Blood in the Ozarks by Clint Lacy is a much-needed look at the war in southeast Missouri. Purchase your copy of Blood in the Ozarks at foothillsmedia.net. That's foothillsmedia.net to purchase your copy of Blood in the Ozarks.
Standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be a bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
But it wouldn't be nothing, nothing without a woman or a girl.
He writes a big article in the New York Times, you know, about how that, you know, his uncle, whatever, was a lay salesman, and he supported this brutal, you know, communist regime, right, in Russia. They were all that being a communist, if you were a Jew, is like your mother's milk, right? That's the milieu you lived in. And communism was supported by Jews, and this far leftist positions, including from the very beginning, the open borders, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, and all these other stuff to change the demographics of America. And so he writes about this. The New York Times writes about it. I got a big article from the New York Times writing just a few short years ago when communism was, you know, when communism was loved, you know, by the whatever. And the only reason that it wasn't became not as loved, even though there's still Jewish communists out there, it was absolutely, you know, transformed because the Russians in the Soviet Union were overthrowing the Jewish power structure. So when you look at the neoconservatives, you had Leo Strauss, who was a former big Trotskyite, big communist for decades. You know, you had famous people like the people who gave us the Iraq War, Paul Wolfowitz and Pearl were both, you know, Trotskyite type guys. You know, you had people, you know, even the family of what was the Weekly Standard, the Crystal family, they were Marxists, right? So they made a conscious.
Somebody that people might recognize, who I think just passed away, David Horowitz.
Yeah,
he's another one who had been an outspoken Trotskyite and then became a big neocon.
So you can talk about conspiracy theories or whatever, but they made a conscious decision right, to become neoconservatives, rather than the natural progression you would think is to be to the left. But they knew they didn't. The left was pretty safe. It's still safe. In fact, the only opposition they're getting much is the Republicans to the Ukraine war.
It's the people who had been on the left when they, you know, 100 years ago, those people are safe. But of course, they brought in a whole bunch of other people, a whole bunch of non-whites who aren't as as indoctrinated or socialized in their priorities, who they weren't worrying about too much. Right. But now it is a problem for them.
But I'm talking about what was essential to them. And they mm-hmm. I think they knew, anybody could tell, that, you know, America was, what, 80-something percent, almost 90%, not 90%, but close to it, for most of the 20th century, until the 1970s. And this is amazing. And they knew that our cities were causing, look at the racial kind of awakening in this country, and people are just realizing, you know, what's going on, is that whites are being victimized with violence far more than blacks, you know, when they were in a free society, at least for the last 150 years in slavery. I mean, even then you could say that it wasn't the regular thing that blacks were kept and raped or murdered or whatever. But whites were victimized by violence from another minority far more than any other, you know, than blacks were victimized by whites. And even the latest figures of the Justice Department show, for instance, that they alleged that the crime of the offenders and the victims between racist white, blacks, Mexicans, and so forth, show whites to be basically per capita. Well, actually, in the actual figures, you know, 70,000 blacks are supposed to be hurt by whites in violence, regular, this is crimes, not necessarily racially motivated, and almost 500,000 whites. And this is maybe by 6% of the population, black males. But, you know, you think about that. I mean, and if you look at that in terms of proportion to population, it's like a white person's got 1/20th or 1/30th or 1/40th of the chance to hurt a black person as a black does to hurt a white person. It's really kind of in terms of that figures, it's amazing. Now, I'm saying this not to demean black people. And I think a lot of that crime has been caused because of the weaponization of blacks against whites, because that's part of the method of divide and conquer in American politics. So if they tell black people all the time that whites are repressing you, hurting you, killing you, murdering you, like the Floyd situation, right, which is ridiculous. But if they tell you all that, and that's the feeling you get, it makes blacks say, we got to vote as a team against these white folks, especially any white folks that defend, say, the rights of white people in the country. We have to vote as a team. We have to be a team. And Jews are able to go in there and pose as a supporters of black people's rights, that they're the leader. They were in the civil rights movement. The civil rights movement was later, though, even the most famous. There was one major, the biggest major black figure in the NAACP was W.E.B. Du Bois, famous intellectual, very communistic. But he left the NAACP, and the rest of the Jews were almost all communists, too, by the way, are Marxists in their orientation. But he left that organization siding with the people like that supported me when I ran for the governor of Louisiana. James Meredith, for instance, the guy that integrated Ole Miss, who later realized that wasn't the way. It was better to have black empowerment. That blacks have been shorted by the whole welfare system didn't do much to alleviate black poverty. In fact, it may have created more poverty, more crime, more broken families than it solved. So these are interesting factors. Yeah. But then again, going back to it, you know, the entire narrative and the allowed narrative, because you can't, if I even think that if Jimmy Dore just came out, he comes close mm-hmm. to it. But if you just come out and say, oh, yeah, it's not left, it's, you know, it's Jews or just Jews. Mm-hmm. You could say Zionists, maybe, right? If it's Jews, they'd be taken off just like I've been taken off. Yeah. So this is controlling the narrative and this is how that media control can affect the entire narrative of the country and people that are beyond even just the direct reach of people like AIPAC or fundraising.
So you were talking about these people who moved on what would seem to be a very unlikely path from being Trotskyite to neocons.
Yeah, to neoconservatives.
Gave a long list of people. There's a bunch of them. And when I explain this, I talk about Jews being more, they tend to be more ethnocentric. They tend to be more likely than others, not unique, but more likely than other groups to think in terms of their group interests. Now, the thing that doesn't mean they're a monolith, because different Jews might have a different idea of what's in Jewish group interests. And so you did have a certain subsegment of the Jewish population that, from the post-World War II era through the 80s, over a period of some decades, went on, they had that realization that you just described, that it's their, what actually would represent Jewish interest better would be to promote it from within the Republican Party.
They needed that sector, right? It's like, they felt like, even though they lost a little bit of it, they lost a lot of it, but they didn't lose it in the highest level in Congress, that's for sure. The Jewish leftist Congress, didn't vote, in fact, as well as the Republicans against the wars and so forth that Jews have been sponsoring, correct?
Well, so, I mean, what you had is in the mid-20th century, the Republicans, the Republicans led by Mr. Republican Robert Taft, they were the ones dragging their feet on wars. People like Father Coughlin, he was dragging his feet on World War II. But
Huey Long have been president of the United States probably if he would have been assassinated by a Jewish doctor.
Exactly. He was a conservative. Of course, he was a conservative.
Huey Long was a populist. He was a pure populist symbol, right?
And he was from a state that didn't have a functioning Republican Party. By the 1980s, then you start seeing a domination of the Republican foreign policy establishment by these neocons in the 80s and 90s, and they really became the war party at that time. But the thing about Jews, in Christianity, the golden rule is do unto others as you would have others do unto you.
In Christianity is, yes, that's correct.
Yeah, for Jews, I the way I'm describing it now is do unto others as in your paranoid delusions you believe they would do unto you.
Yeah, the Jewish slogan is that if you think somebody's going to hurt you tomorrow, if you simply believe that and they're paranoid to believe that, you have to strike them first before they have a chance.
I think
before they even do it to prove they're going to do it.
This explains an awful lot because you mix together that ethnocentrism with I believe kind of a paranoia, and the paranoia there may be some sort of innate tendency towards it, but it's fueled. That whatever tendency they have towards it is fueled by things like the Holocaust narrative and the eternal victim narrative, which there's big problems with those narratives, and you're not allowed to question them, but there's big problems with them. But that fuels it. And so, if you grow up thinking that the Goyim are going to turn on you whenever they get a chance, the Goyim are going to turn on you if they run their own societies, it's going to make you very ruthless. And then you are going to do unto the Goyim before they do unto you.
And it's really shockingly unethical to use things like crimes against Jews, whatever in the Holocaust is true. And there's a lot. I'm not saying that the Holocaust didn't exist. I can't say that. If I did, I wouldn't even be able to go to Europe. I can't go to a lot of Europe right now. But it's like if denying or trying to deny in any part, in the slightest way, the Holocaust will be the first thing that will get you sanctioned. They'll get you not be able to rent the hotel room, not be able to have this a site, a social media site or whatever. You can talk about a lot of other things, but you can't talk about anything like that. But like Finkelstein says, he wrote a great book on the subject called The Holocaust Industry. And he talks about the corruption of the Jewish leadership and the fact that they established the huge attention to the Holocaust. He said, he pointed out in the early 50s, this is 8 years after the war, that there was no attention to the Holocaust hardly at all. Mm-hmm. It was just one other factor. And one of the reasons was because the Jewish media itself, that was close to the facts, a lot of them didn't believe the Holocaust story as far as it was presented by some of the radical Jews. They believed it was exaggerated and that it was, you know, that it was a wartime propaganda.
What I say is exaggerated, embellished, and decontextualized.
Exactly.
And you know, and context. Everybody, you hear all these Jews talking about October 7th and saying, well, you know, what choice does Israel have? Well, let's go back to October 6th. What choice did the people in Gaza have? What choice did Hamas have? They had 1,000 times less choice than the Israelis. What choice did they have?
Yeah. It's like the Jewish minister from Israel said on Democracy Now. And she said specifically that he says they use the Holocaust. They always use it. She said it's a trick to whenever they talk about horrific Jewish ethnic crimes against the Palestinians and others, the first thing they do is they bring up the Holocaust. And as Epstein says, it's unconscionable to use supposedly Jewish suffering to then justify the mass murder of children and so forth. Well, we just lost Dr. Slattery. Hopefully he'll come back in a minute. Yes, folks, that's just how it works. Thank you, Mr. Engineer. It's just amazing when you look at this whole complexity of how this tiny percentage of the population of the world, tiny percentage of the population of Europe, even very tiny percentage of America is able to control so much. And the interesting thing was is that recent video we played, and it's a really amazing video, where you have this Jew, a former Jewish senator, get up and say, we Jews, we're masters of the universe. Now, see, if we say that, we're anti-Semitic, and they take your site down. A former Jewish senator at a Jewish organizational meeting can say, no problem. He talked about Larry Page and Sergey Brin and so forth. I'm hearing something. Is that from Slattery's connection, Mr. Engineer? I don't know if you could hear me. But anyway, I'm getting some sort of interruption there. But anyway, so it's just this is amazing and unbelievable to think about in terms of how they're able to command this thing. Again, you can't talk about Jews. You can talk about the left. Even you can talk about how the New York Times is lying about the alleged rapes. There's not a single case of documented rape from October 7 of any Israeli women. Our girls. There's not one. And they even talk about the fact that when they were doing this work on it, they admitted, these people even do an article, that they contacted all the hospitals, all the clinics, all the police stations. And when women are molested or killed, they always do these kinds of studies. But so when you look at all that, it's just amazing to think about. There's not a single documented case. Now, this is standard procedure. If a woman is killed or there's any evidence of possible rape, it's always investigated. They want to know who committed it. They want to know if there's DNA evidence. They want to know what happened to them. And, you know, they're obligated to that. And they told this family that their daughter, they didn't tell their family the daughter was raped, but they even, you know, pointed out that she wasn't raped. And this was headlined in the New York Times. But ironically, no one can talk about the gorilla in the room. And it's not a gorilla. It's like a Tyrannosaurus Rex that will consume you, that will destroy you, if you dare to talk about this Jewish power structure that is in legendary a position of power. It's amazing what they can do. And they operate by the principle that the same principle that was talked about by Machiavelli. And by Stalin, who also repeated this kind of same basic idea in different words, he said it's better for a leader to be feared than to be loved. Someone who loves a person can change their mind and do lots of harm to them. We see a lot of that with husbands and wives, right, when they have a fallout. But people who fear you, who feel like they can destroy you, even not just physically murder you, or that you have a good chance of being physically abused or killed or, you know, whatever, that you're not going to try, for most times, you're not going to try to cross those people. So they all say, Machiavelli used to say, it's better to be feared than loved. And this is the way they operate. A good friend of mine, a pilot, you know, is very erudite. and very intelligent. He says, look, they were kind of happy to point out that they're bombing, right, the humanitarian aid to Gaza. And their argument for that, you know, in fact, Ben-Gvir, a Jewish convicted terrorist. And if you're convicted of terrorism in Israel, you're a terrorist. People in this country don't even know that the Jewish Defense League was a terrorist organization as listed by the FBI. In fact, they said this was the top of the list of terrorist organizations in some of the 60s and most of the 70s.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized. My lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee that's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
People in this country don't even know that the Jewish Defense League was a terrorist organization as listed by the FBI. In fact, they said this was the top of the list of terrorist organizations in some of the 60s and most of the 70s. The JDL, Jewish Defense League, Mark Kahan. The guy who was a member of that, by the way, was Ben-Gvir, who just recently said that we must bomb the distribution centers for food. We must starve the Palestinian people. This is a massive war crime. This is a massive crime of genocide. Genocide is when you target a people by their ethnicity, by their race, by their faith, by their nationality. That's genocide. You're targeting people by race to destroy them in whole or in part. That's the Genocide Convention, in whole or in part. And that's exactly what Jews are doing. They're guilty of genocide by any clear definition of the term. And this guy comes to speak in America right after he made a big speech saying that not only will we not prevent aid coming in there, if anybody attempts to bring aid in there, we will bomb them. Now, they did the same thing when the international aid things, when some got through, where people from Europe, Europeans, non-Palestinians, were trying to bring aid and food. These people, obviously, they're not supplying them with terrorism. And they followed them. They monitored them. These people even gave their coordinates to the Jewish military so they wouldn't be bombed. And they're tracked by drones and tracked by whatever, and they're obliterated. European people who are trying to get aid and prevent the death of innocent civilians. And it got out. And they would say, oh, yeah, well, we didn't mean to do that, whatever. But they know what that communicates to people. So if they're going to prevent any food and by the way, they're killing people that run the plants. They're killing any sort of university professors, any journalists, because they don't want the message you got. This is one of the few wars where they're just prohibiting journalists from other country, unless they're working for the Jews. Unless they have someone like Charles Murray or something. Not Charles Murray, excuse me. The other Murray. And, then they can take them on, who they're paying to promote the just genocidal state of Israel. I mean, and like Dr. Slattery was saying earlier, I hope he can still join us back. I'm hoping anyway. I'd like, because we're out of time. We're just getting the swan song, but he's back, I think.
We're thinking Douglas Murray.
Douglas Murray. Right. So, and like you said earlier, these Jewish organizations, I want you to think about it, folks. Is there any denial that Jews have many organizations, that their entire mission statement is advancing specifically the interests of the Jewish people in economic ways, in world opinion, in the support for the state of Israel, in support of Jewish organizations that are mobilized to stop whatever they call anti-Semitism? What is anti-Semitism today? Basically, it's defined as equating Jews with Nazis. Well, Jews aren't Nazis. It's true. They're super Nazis. They're the Nazis that Hollywood describes, or how it's the way Hollywood depicts Nazis as the most evil, corrupt.
By the way, that show just got cut short because of the new Skype issue. It just got cut off. Okay, well, that was fun. I hope you enjoyed that, and I'll be back again tomorrow with Mark Collett and a very exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.